Episode 1131, The Odyssey Introduction.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Ben DiBono. We are back to intro another deep dive that will be exclusively out on our Patreon. But we're going to get some good stuff for you here. And in fact, this is going to be not just an introduction to the Iliad, but also another little fun topic to bring up. And maybe to introduce that little topic, I want to ask you, Matthew.
Yes.
How do you feel about road trips?
Good question. I have mixed feelings about them. At some points, there's been points in my life where I've really enjoyed road trips. Then I can also think of a few road trips that have maybe not gone exactly like I would have wanted. So what brings up this question?
Especially when you have kids, right?
It does change some of the dynamics.
I feel like road trips are a little romanticized because one way or another, it's not fun to spend 10 hours a day in the car. Well, you and I have been on a road trip together.
Yeah, we went to, what state was that? Colorado.
Colorado for a missions trip.
I was just thinking, though. If you are asking, because the Odyssey is a road trip of sorts.
It is.
I don't really like road novels.
Well, let's come back to that point.
Okay.
So we'll combine them in just a second. Okay. But I did want to reminisce on our road trip.
Talk about Colorado?
Well, one of my favorite parts of that road trip is, do you remember there was one point we had just started recording. I didn't plan to talk about this because I hadn't thought of it. And we had just first started recording. So we were talking about the show and everything. And we had decided to try out, as we were driving down the road, an a cappella version of the Mario theme.
Yeah.
And we went, I don't remember how long before we realized we had people in the back seat who were probably ready to murder us. But it was great. It was, and I think we did. I don't remember where, but I think we performed that post credits on a Life Report episode.
Yeah, it's got to be this summer. Yeah, so what Ben's referencing is, in year one of the Sci-Fi Christian, we did our one and only mission trip together. So way back in 2011, we started the Sci-Fi Christian and traveled to Colorado together.
Yeah. Well, we're not even the same religion anymore.
I know. So much has changed.
So, like, any mission trip I'd go on, you'd be the target.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind.
So, yeah, that road trips.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, you famously have mixed feelings on the road novel.
Very famously.
So why don't you? Maybe they aren't mixed at all. Maybe they're not mixed.
I mean, I like a story that builds. Now, before I keep on going with this explanation, I'll give the Odyssey a break. Okay?
Fair enough.
We'll give Homer a break. We like the Iliad. But in general, I like a story that's building. So if each chapter is like, here's who we're visiting here. This next chapter, totally different setting, new characters. Okay, on to the next little adventure. Kind of like The Hobbit. I think this is something that threw me off with The Hobbit. American Gods. I ended up not liking that aspect very much. Although American Gods did have some things that were continuing on story to story.
You liked some of those side stories, didn't you?
No, it's the opposite. I did not like this. I don't like the side stories.
No, not the side stories of Shadow, just like the one-off chapters.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, yes. Okay, we'll move on from there. But
If you know, you know.
So, yeah, this is my main complaint. Just like in television, you and I think we agree on this. We both like a serialized television series rather than episodic. And I feel like road novels are episodic.
Certainly can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, I did start to think as we were preparing for this, because there are road novels that build. And I was thinking, like, what are the all-time worst literary road trips that you could go on?
I don't know. I was some more road trip books are coming, or road novels are coming to my head. Like, we together read On the Road.
We read On the Road,
which I think I had positive feeling towards, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I don't think either one of us loved it, but we both liked it.
Yeah. But okay, so.
But On the Road doesn't even scratch it.
You're saying worst road trips are just like memorable road trips in literature?
The worst ones that the road trip where you'd say, that is one I would not want to be along on. And what started me thinking about this wasn't just The Odyssey, but I recently read William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, which is about a family where the mom dies and she wants to be buried in her hometown. And so they go on a road trip to bury her, and it's just like misery the whole way. And so my review on Goodreads, I said this was a worse road trip than The Grapes of Wrath, which The Grapes of Wrath is also a terrible road trip, you know, where people are just dying along the way. But then that started to get me thinking, like, but wait a second, that doesn't even cut it, you know, because Frodo had a pretty bad road trip. Like, his road trip was so bad, he couldn't even stay on the planet afterwards.
That's true. Although it had a good, like, he did help people.
It had a good outcome, but it was bad for him.
Who had a better road trip then? Frodo or Bilbo?
Oh, Bilbo's was way better. Bilbo.
But think about his ending.
He came back rich.
Decades of misery, though, because of his addiction.
Not for him. Bilbo came out great. Like, if we're judging the road trip based on the outcome for others, Frodo's wins because he got rid of Sauron. But Bilbo, like, he just passed all the misery on to other people.
Got taller.
he came back rich.
Okay.
Yeah, it was great.
You know, now that we're talking about road trips, I'm not thinking of bad ones only, but you introduced me to a movie I've only seen once. We watched it again during season one of Sci-Fi Christian, so 2011. It might not even be a road trip, but it came to my mind. Is the movie Into the Wild a road trip movie?
Yeah, you could look at it that way.
Just popped into my mind. I haven't thought about it in a while.
That's such a great movie.
I haven't seen it recently.
I love it.
I recently watched a few of the National Lampoon Vacation movies. Those are road trip heavy.
Yeah.
Not good. They do not go well.
You know
Christmas
what book
one's not so
arguably
much.
Has the best and worst road trip of all time, all in one? The Divine Comedy.
Oh, yeah. No,
like,
kidding.
When your road trip starts in hell and involves you literally climbing up the hide of Satan, that's pretty bad. But on the other hand, when you go to heaven at the end of it, you know, so Dante kind of takes, you know, talk about the extremes. You know, so nestled somewhere in between then would, of course, be The Odyssey.
Before we get to The Odyssey, transitioning from one of my favorite books to a early 2000s movie, there's literally a movie called Road Trip. Have you ever seen an early 2000s comedy?
I have not, but isn't Tom Green in it?
I think, yes, that's the face I'm picturing. I believe Tom Green's in it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Before we go on to The Odyssey, where do you fall on Tom Green?
So I've never seen anything with Tom Green.
You never watched his old show?
No.
Oh, man. When I was in high school, I was a big fan, but as you can imagine, I'm sure he's not great now for like our updated senses and preferences. But
oh, right,
you know how like we've grown as humans. Yes, here we go. The year 2000, road trip. There he is, Tom Green, right there in the middle.
So I do. Road Trip does stick in my memory for a particular reason, but I think it's a better after the credits story.
All right,
it's not really. It's not very dirty. But it could be construed as a little dirty. So stay tuned for my road trip story about the movie Road Trip.
Wow. So you haven't seen it, but you have a story about it.
I do have a story about it.
All right, listeners, that's something to look forward to post-credits.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So The Odyssey. What's everything you know about The Odyssey?
Oh, we did this for Iliad, and I was very wrong.
Yeah.
I think I might know a little bit more about this one.
Okay.
All right. Name for Odysseus.
Well, you're already ahead of the game.
A character we got to know in the Iliad.
Yep.
And I paid special attention to his mentions during that book. All right. I'll tell you what I know. Some of it might be based on, oh, brother, where art thou?
Which is totally fine.
All right. So he's going to, at some point, do you mind if I spoil here?
I think you can. The book is 5,000 years old.
At some point, Odysseus is going to encounter a cyclops.
Yes.
At some point, he's going to encounter the sirens.
Yes. What are the sirens?
The, like, evil mermaids.
I will go with it for now. Yeah, not exactly, but
so he's trying to get back to his wife, whose name is Penelope.
Yep.
I know way more about this, I feel like. When we did this for Iliad, I started talking about the Trojan horse, and you're like, wrong, and I stopped.
just...
All right, I'm out.
I'm like the teacher, the pupil gets it wrong, and I just destroy your confidence.
Let's see. So I know it's just a long journey. Now that I've read Iliad, I'm assuming it's Trojan War is over. Odysseus is now traveling back home.
It's such a long journey that the term Odyssey now means long journey.
Okay.
Like, you know, this is such a road novel, not novel, poem.
Yeah.
That like it's the term Odyssey now has a broader meaning beyond just this.
Do you want to spoil me? I mean, how many years are we talking about here? How long does it take him to get home?
Oh, it's a long time. Like, I mean, we pick up...
Like a decades or like years?
Oh, yeah. It's
decades to get home?
Yeah, it's quite a long time.
Why does it... Why did it get lost on the way?
You'll find out.
Oh, wait. In Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, he's a prisoner. Does Odysseus get imprisoned?
See, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. I'm actually excited to rewatch that. That's such a great movie.
I've never watched it in light of the Odyssey, so that would be fun for me. Okay, so in that movie, he's traveling with only two companions, but I get the sense that the Odyssey is going to have Odysseus and multiple companions.
He does have multiple companions.
So not just two friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what you'll actually be surprised by with the Odyssey is that, although we're going to think about it in terms of Odysseus's Odyssey, his journey home, his attempt to get home following the Trojan War after being long waylaid, is that you can actually kind of divide the Odyssey into three parts. And the first one, Odysseus isn't even the main character. His son Telemachus is. So Telemachus and Penelope are home on Ithaca, waiting for Odysseus to get home. And Penelope has a problem.
Home on Ithaca? Or is that the name of the city or a
That's
ship?
That's the home of their island.
Okay, yes. There's some sci-fi show uses Ithaca like a ship name.
It's been used a million
times.
Okay,
yeah.
So Penelope has a bunch of suitors lined up to marry her. So they basically want to declare, as also happens in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, they want to declare Odysseus dead. The clock is ticking. Penelope is going to get remarried and Odysseus is going to be out. So we're going to have Telemachus, who is trying to get his father home, rescue his father, and prevent his mother from getting remarried to one of the suitors. That's number one. And then all of that, also, the third member of the trio waiting for Odysseus is his loyal dog, Argos. Don't ask me how Argos is still alive like 30 years later, but he is. You know, Argos is still going strong. And the suitors are not just like, well, you know, eventually he's going to be dead. They are actively bleeding Ithaca dry. So they are eating Odysseus out of house and home, literally.
Is Ithaca only their island? Or is it an island multiple?
So you know how Odysseus is a king?
Yes.
Ithaca is his kingdom.
Okay.
So it's an area of Greece.
There's other people there besides his family. And the suitors are trying to take everything he owns?
Yeah. They're eating, they're drinking, they're basically bankrupting him.
If they marry Penelope, do they become the new king of Ithaca?
Yes.
Okay.
So those are the stakes.
This seems much more, whereas both are stories, you could say.
Yeah.
Iliad had hints of this feels like
history,
some sort of history. This one feels more like story. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. I'm put a pin in that thought because let's come back to that. Part two then is going to be all about Odysseus's voyage home, and then part three is going to be about his confrontation with the suitors when he gets home. So you're absolutely right. Like, your instinct that you're picking up on is spot on. You know, both of them are mythic. Both of them are narrative. Both of them are foundational, but in very different ways. You know, the Iliad does, as you said, have that air of mythologized history. I look at the Odyssey, and there's a lot of ways. I don't want to be reductionistic here, but one way that you can look at it is as mythologized psychology. You know, Odysseus is trying to get back home after going through this war. You know, he's trying to re-win his home. Telemachus has to go to rescue his father, which is a recurring theme in Jungian psychology. And Jordan Peterson talks about that idea quite a bit in his work as well. Not even directly related to the Odyssey, but just the idea of rescuing the father and the father archetype. You know, you have, it's like, well, what exactly are the politics of Ithaca where the suitor, like if you're thinking in those terms, you're thinking wrong. Like, what do the suitors represent there? They represent this rot that is in Odysseus's home, that he's vacated his home and allowed this to set in, you know, and it's going, they threaten to destroy everything that he has to come home to. So you have to think of it more mythologically from that perspective, psychologically, more archetypally, if you will. And that's where the Odyssey is really going to unfold with its power for us, is as we unpack. I don't want to reduce it to symbols, but as we unpack what some of those symbols are all about as Odysseus is coming home, it's very different from the Iliad.
You brought up a conversation during our deep dive over on the extra feed about this idea that we use the author name Homer, but technically we don't know if there ever really was a Homer.
Right.
And we don't know for sure that Iliad and Odyssey were written by the same person. And I think you'd say probably they are not written by the same person. Where do you land on that?
Yeah, I mean, the whole process of oral tradition being written down and then redacted. Remember, redaction being that editing process. We talked about that during the Iliad episodes. Is very complex. Homer, I don't know, this might make people mad, but I'll say it. Homer is the author of the Odyssey in the way that Moses is the author of the Pentateuch. You know, it doesn't mean that Homer didn't exist. It doesn't mean that Homer wasn't part of the development of that process, just as I'm sure Moses was. Like the historical Moses, I'm 100% positive that the material that we have in Genesis through Deuteronomy was influenced, small or large, by Moses, the historical figure of Moses. I think the same thing of the Iliad and the Odyssey. But for sure, within both of those processes, there's a rich process going back to oral tradition and then going through a redaction period as well. Give my standard disclaimer when talking about the Bible, that when I talk about the Bible being inspired by the Holy Spirit, I'm referring to the whole soup to nuts process. So, like, if the thought of somebody redacting the Bible makes you nervous, I consider that to be part of the inspiration process to give us what we have today. That's a longer argument there, but you don't need to be concerned about that for anybody who maybe is hearing those ideas for the first time. So with Homer, then, same type of thing. Like, just like it's helpful to think about Moses as, you know, if you're just reading your Bible, you're doing a Bible study or reading through it or whatever, like, it's perfectly fine to just think about Moses as the author of those first five books. You don't need to sit there and, like, in the back of your head be like, well, actually, it's a whole redaction. No, it's just accept that and move on. If you're doing scholarship, it's helpful to be familiar with that. And if you're wanting to interact with some of those ideas as you're reading, it's helpful to be familiar that they exist as well. Same thing with the Odyssey. As we're reading the Odyssey, if it's easiest to just think this was written by a guy named Homer back in ancient Greece, that's perfectly fine. You know, we'll bring up some things as we go through in terms of notes and ideas and all of that, but it's okay to just ignore that too.
I don't know why, but for me, I like to think that there really isn't a Homer. Like, we have these stories. They developed from oral narrative. Somebody eventually wrote them down, and here we go.
Well, and I would say, regardless of whether or not there's a Homer, it's probably a little bit more than that, because I think that it's if we think about oral tradition, there's sort of this informal development of it, and I'm not an expert on it, but I've read enough about it where I can speak to this at least ballpark correctly. So there is sort of a informal passing on of stories, and those stories have a natural evolution the way anything like that would be as it's passed on, albeit with much, much greater accuracy than you and I would expect. And I think this is something modern people don't understand about pre-literate societies, is that the ability they had to pass on oral tradition with great accuracy. I think people would be stunned to whatever you think that ability was, you're underestimating it. Okay, but nevertheless, there's sort of an informal passing on of oral tradition. What we have with, when we talk about epic poems like the Iliad and the Odyssey, is more formalized than that. So forget it even being written down, because you're right, eventually it's written down, but prior to it being written down, it is formalized in that. And one of the markers we see of that is, you saw in the Iliad how there are multiple places where Zeus will tell Iris, who is his messenger, go and tell Athena this, and he'll vomit out a paragraph of a message. And then Iris, a few pages later, will show up to Athena and say word for word the same message. Those are markers of that sort of formalized oral tradition. Well, why? Well, because they're the bard, the troubadour, however it would have been, the individual would have been thought of, the poet, those are aids to recitation. you know, to be able to memorize and repeat back word for word this poem. And so that's some of the stuff we would look at. So there is greater care and formality to it than just sort of this oral tradition that was naturally evolving and then got written down. So we do have markers of that, whether or not there is a singular author named Homer who was doing the lion's share of that.
I'm thinking of passages also we read in the Iliad that were just beautifully written.
Yeah.
And like moving to experience.
So there's artistry involved.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. So I guess it can't be as simple as this is just somebody. Yeah. So I guess though, it could be, all my thoughts are coming out at once. It could be lots of people wrote down the story that was told orally, and this happens to be the best one.
I mean, there's versions of that for sure. Like, we do see fragments of the same narratives showing up in other places. And indeed, there was a whole epic cycle, most of which is lost outside of the Iliad and the Odyssey. But we have references to elsewhere, fragments that exist and that are going to touch on similar narratives. So, yeah, there's no question that this isn't the only place where these narratives are covered. I think the other thing to remember, too, is that the redaction process is part of that. So maybe the best way to adjust thinking on this is like, if we think of how a book is written today, an author sits down and writes it, and yes, there's a whole editing, polishing part of it, and then it's published. It's sort of the inverse of that, in that there may be an author, but it's less of an author going away into his room and penning this grand narrative and then producing it. It's like it's sort of done out in the open. It's inherited from probably oral fragments. It is then brought together into a whole. It is eventually written down, maybe not even by that author, because of course, once one person is reciting this poem, let's just call that person Homer, who brings this together in its original form. He's certainly not the only poet who's going out and reciting and performing this thing. Eventually it gets written down, and then later different redactions take place to it. So whereas we think of this sort of writing, editing, conceiving process as being one point in time, and then it's unleashed onto the public, unless you're George Lucas and you go back and you add in crap CGI later. This is like this whole process where you may have an individual who is doing the bulk of it, but there's many voices involved. And indeed, Genesis and a lot of the Old Testament bears those same markers.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in. And for some reason, and I could be totally wrong, and I'll ask you a question here as a follow-up. I feel like my initial sense is that I'm going to enjoy this one more, even though I gave Iliad 5 stars. Do you have a preference between these two?
You know, I think if you'd asked me before this, I probably would have said the Odyssey. But then I really enjoyed reading the Iliad,
Yeah. You
know, and not that I didn't before. But yeah, I think you probably will enjoy this one more, too.
So listeners, if you're interested in joining us on this journey, but you want to go back and do the Iliad first, we did a deep dive series on the Iliad, which you can check out at patreon.com/thescifichristian. And this is just a tease, this intro episode. We're going to be doing the deep dive on Odyssey over on the Patreon feed. So if you want to skip ahead and just do Odyssey, we're starting that, I think, in 1 or 2 weeks.
Yes. So let's start with the first two books. I think that's what we're doing with Iliad, right? Two books. There's 24 books in this one,
yeah, exactly.
Just like there was with the Iliad.
Do it. Two books at a time. So,
yeah.
So next week, though, we're going to be reviewing the movie Troy, which is very loosely based on the Iliad.
Yeah.
I'll have that done. And then in 2 weeks, we'll start the Odyssey.
It's based on the Iliad in the same way the Book of Mormon is based on Jesus Christ.
There it is. So listeners, join us over on the Patreon feed, patreon.com/thescifichristian. But that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Bandy Bono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off.
Goodbye.
We didn't even talk about it, but our total journey plan is Iliad, Odyssey, and then Aeneid. So,
and then Dante.
And then a redo of Dante, because we've discussed Dante, but we haven't given it the deep dive.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
It's time to do a deep dive.
I mean, this is going to be a great year. I don't know if we'll even accomplish all that in this calendar year.
We will not. But we'll get there.
Yeah, so it'll be a fun journey.
It's
Odyssey.
Our own... You stole the joke right out of my mouth.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say that it's our own little Odyssey.
All right, listeners, so long, folks.
Goodbye.